Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
And another edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM, 750 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be along with you on the afternoon drive as we talk both local and national sports. And unfortunately, we have some sad news to start off the show with today. Cortez Kennedy, an icon with the Seattle Seahawks, who was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2012, has died at the age of 48. This was reported first by the Orlando, Florida Police Department. Orlando Police confirmed to ESPN and other outlets that they are investigating the former defensive tackle's death, but said, quote, "There is nothing suspicious to report at this time. Kennedy died alone, according to police." A very sad day. Kennedy was a force inside. Well, he was a run stopper. He was a threat to rush the quarterback. He was a 1992 Defensive Player of the Year, went to 8 Pro Bowls, had 58 sacks. And, I mean, you look at today's game with the likes of Ndamukong Suh and even Aaron Donald, 58 sacks, that's a high number for a tackle. Spent his entire 11-season career with the Seattle Seahawks. He started 153 out of 167 games. He was named to the AP 1990s All-Decade Team, and he also had 448 total tackles, 6 forced fumbles, 5 fumble recoveries, and 3 interceptions during his career. Absolutely a Hall of Famer. He retired back in 2000, and he was named to the Seahawks Ring of Honor, and they even retired his number 96. He was a 3rd overall pick in 1990, an All-American at the University of Miami. He was on the 1989 National Championship team for the Hurricanes, and he was also inducted into their Ring of Honor as well. Just a very sad day. This was a very likable individual. Just a classy guy, and honestly, one of the greats to ever play up front. I mean, we're talking about a Hall of Famer. Cortez Kennedy has passed away at the age of 48. Let's move on and take a look at some of the other news trickling throughout the national sports scene, and we'll stick with the NFL. It was reported last week that the Inglewood Palace, Stan Kroenke's Inglewood Palace, that will play home to both the Rams and the Chargers, it's going to be delayed as far as the opening by a full year due to heavy rainfall in Southern California. Now, because of that, the NFL has guidelines which states no brand new stadium can play host to the Super Bowl following its first year. Okay, so if you open in 2019, you can't play host to the Super Bowl in 2019. You have to wait an additional year. Now, the Rams will open in 2020. They were expected to play host to the Super Bowl in 2021. The NFL has now moved that. The 2021 Super Bowl will be played in Tampa Bay. The Rams Stadium will play host to the Super Bowl 1 year later in 2022. So the Buccaneers and the Rams, they now have 90 days to prove that their facilities will be up to par to play host to the Super Bowl. I would expect things to stay pat at this point in time. The decision was made during today's annual one-day meeting of the league's 32 owners. It was in Chicago. It took place days after the Rams and Chargers announced that record rainfall would actually halt that 2020 date of the new stadium opening up. Roger Goodell said that Stan Kroenke was incredibly cooperative and remains focused on getting a quality stadium done for the long term in Los Angeles. Now, that was not the only news coming out of the meetings today in the NFL. It was also announced that the overtime period has been shortened drastically. NFL team owners approved shortening overtime from 15 minutes to 10 minutes for all preseason and regular season games. The approval comes after the proposal was initially presented to the owners during the annual league meeting back in March. Now, NFL.com and the NFL Network first broke this news. The rule changed is aimed at improving player safety. There have been concerns about the number of additional plays teams undergo while playing a full 15-minute overtime period, especially when one of the teams is subject to playing its next game on Sunday if the Monday night game goes into overtime, or maybe even a Thursday. Some teams were concerned that the condensed period would limit their ability to control the ball, which I think is a big problem, but it appears those worries are going to be pushed aside. I don't know that this is necessary, to be honest with you. I also think that it means both teams will probably get one crack at a possession. And we'll break down the numbers and we'll take a look at it. There have been 83 overtime games over the last five seasons, 22 of them lasting at least 10 minutes into the overtime. So this may be an irrelevant change of rule for OTs. Of course, once you get into the postseason, it really doesn't matter because it's basically sudden death. I mean, there can be no ties in the postseason. But this was approved earlier today, so now NFL overtime periods will be just 10 minutes. Let's take a look at the schedule in the national sports scene. NBA, big game tonight in the Eastern Conference Finals. The Boston Celtics pulled a shocker over the Cavaliers in Game 3. It took a Superman-type effort from Marcus Smart and Avery Bradley, and LeBron James was not very good in that game. But Boston has this now at a 2-1 series. If they can win again tonight on the road, start time at 6:30, they'll gain home court advantage back and they'll shorten the series to a best 2 out of 3. And if you're a Boston Celtics fan after the way games 1 and 2 went, that is all you can ask for. I just say don't get your hopes up. Las Vegas has this at a 15.5-point spread. And for good reason, because Game 3 was on the verge of being another monumental blowout before Cleveland squandered a lead, gave up a 35 spot in that contest, and that contributed to the lead kind of evaporating. But tonight we get Game 4, and I'll be honest, I am interested. I have a newfound interest in this series. I was bored with it midway through Game 3. I was bored with it. Figured it was going to be a 4-game sweep just like everyone else, especially when Isaiah Thomas went down. Boston has at least piqued my interest for Game 4 tonight. We take a look at the scoreboard for Major League Baseball. No day games, but there is a full slate, and that all begins at 5 o'clock. We'll get San Francisco at the Cubs. Start time here, 5 p.m. 5:05, Minnesota at Baltimore. The Yankees will play host to the Royals. Seattle at Washington. Philly will welcome in Colorado. And the Rangers on the road to Fenway to battle the Boston Red Sox. All of these games still in the 5 o'clock hour. Cleveland at Cincinnati. The Mets will host San Diego. We get the Angels on the road to take on Tampa Bay, Pittsburgh at Atlanta, and Toronto at Milwaukee. We move into the 6 o'clock hour. The Astros, with Lance McCullers on the mound, will welcome in Detroit, Chicago. The White Sox will travel to meet the Arizona Diamondbacks. Second game of a doubleheader tonight on ESPN, the Dodgers, with Clayton Kershaw on the mound, play host to Lance Lynn and the St. Louis Cardinals. Nightcap, it's Miami at Oakland. Today on the show, we're going to talk NBA basketball. Of course, the Golden State Warriors become the second team in Western Conference history to advance to the NBA Finals 3 consecutive years. The only team that has done that, the only franchise to have done that, is the Lakers, and they've done it 7 times. But the Warriors become the only other Western Conference team to do that, and they did it in fairly convincing fashion once again. The thing that blew my mind in this game last night, they make it look so easy. And I know that San Antonio's lineup wasn't what we expected going into the postseason. I get that. But Kevin Durant last night was 10 of 13, and it was an easy 10 of 13. And I have seen nothing that would lead me to believe that Cleveland, or I guess Boston, can stop this Golden State Warrior team. I think the NBA Finals are done in 5. 12-0 right now is Golden State. I'm going to give the Eastern Conference the benefit of that out. If it is Cleveland, they win 1 game. They get 1 home game. This team is firing on all cylinders. They are playing their best basketball of the season right now. We'll talk NBA basketball a little bit later with a good friend, Jameson Welsh. Also on the show today, we're going to be joined by Wade Williams, the Carbon High School Lady Dino softball coach. He'll join us to recap the season now that the spring sports year is officially over for high school. We only have just a couple of days left of school in itself. And so Coach Williams will join us on the show. We'll go over the Lady Dinos and how they wrapped up the 2017 season. That's all straight ahead here on this Tuesday edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. Sarah Owyler closed out her stellar track and field career at Carbon High School with a state championship in the long jump as the Dinos closed out the track and field season this past weekend at the 3A state championship meet in Provo. Competing against 20 other athletes from around the state, Owyler registered a jump that easily topped second place Morgan Myers of Desert Hills. Starley Woodbury finished in third, followed by Carbon's Mikkel Monson. Owyler's top finish marked the only first-place nod for the Lady Dinos, as the team finished 7th overall with 28 points. Desert Hills claimed the overall state championship with 164 points, followed by Cedar in 2nd with 130. Dixie, Stansbury, and Bear River rounded out the top 5. The Carbon boys finished at the bottom of the Stack 3A division, scoring just 3 points throughout the meet. Desert Hills again finished at the top of the leaderboard with 131 points. Hurricane edged Stansbury by 3 for second place, while Morgan and Cedar completed the top 5. Later on this week, we'll be joined by Coach Jimmy Jukes of the Carbonetto Track and Field Squad to recap the 2017 season. The Emory Spartans also wrapped up the track and field season this past weekend, and while they produced no state champions, Braden Ivey stole the show for Emory as he finished 2nd in the 200 meters. He fell short of Dallin Draper of Delta. Ivey ran the 200 meters with a time of 10.99 seconds, while Draper was at 10.88. Logan Cox finished in 4th place in the 200 meters and also in the 400 meters. To help round out Emory's scoring, Chase Jukes delivered a top 5 finish in the javelin. Tonight will be the second and final night of tryouts for the Helper American Legion baseball team. The squad opened up tryouts for both the Helper Squad and the Utah's Perfect Game League team, which will be represented by Carbon. It'll consist of freshmen and sophomores coming into the high school. Coach Jeff Cincinnatus of the Carbon Dino Squad will once again manage the team. Again, tryouts, the second and final night, will take place tonight at the Helper American Legion baseball field beginning at 6 p.m. For questions or more information regarding the American Legion season, you're free to contact Coach Jeff Cincinnatus. You'll find more information at CastleCountryRadio.com. We move over to high school football, and yesterday on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we were joined by Coach Josh Huntsman, who is entering his third season as head coach of the Carbon High School football team. Now with the spring sports season complete and school just about to let out, Coach Huntsman is preparing for the 2017 season, which will begin in August. Huntsman talked about some of the off-season preparation up to this point.
We brought our kids in a little bit early. We've been working with them since about December, but you know, it hasn't been mandatory. It's been come in at when you can, and we'll work with you. But yeah, once February hit, we were into it pretty hot and heavy in the weight room.
In just a couple of weeks, the Dinos will take a trip up north for the annual Ute Shoot, which is a 7-on-7 camp that the Dinos attended last year. Coach Huntsman talked about this particular event.
Colleges are looking for players at that point, and so it's a recruiting tool for a college. But we go there looking at, okay, what's going to be viable for our offense? We know that we have 6 good passing plays right now. Are there any more that we can add? And we're going to see different defenses throughout the day from different teams of the same caliber, you know, different 3A teams throughout, you know, the Intermountain region.
Off-season workouts will continue for Carbon throughout the coming weeks, moving into the month of July, and then again to the start of the regular season in August. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We'll have more on the Carbon High School football team as these camps and dates approach. You'll find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. You can also listen to archived interviews and also the podcast of Drive Time Sports, which is live on KOAL Monday through Friday, beginning at 4 p.m. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
There's no crying in baseball!
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss the play ball!
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Holy cow!
The high school spring sports season is in the books, so over the next few days we'll be recapping the 2017 season, bringing in some of the coaches from Carbon and Emory High School. Yesterday we started talking about fall sports. Believe it or not, off-season workouts are underway right now. Today we're going to focus on the Carbon Lady Dinos softball team. They actually performed very, very well at the state championship tournament. They actually advanced further than they have in close to a decade. Joining us right now to talk about the end of the season and the youth on this Carbon High School roster that should return next year, we have Coach Wade Williams. Coach, good to get you back on today. Thank you.
Thanks, Jordan. It's good to be back on the air, and we had a great season.
You guys definitely did, Coach. You had a tough pod to begin with as you guys entered the number four seed coming out of Region 12. It was very difficult for you guys having to travel on the road to go to Cedar. You guys battled Cedar tough but lost that first game. I know once you lose one game, the first game in a double elimination tournament, it's a long road to get back to the state championship.
True, but we bounced back the next game, and we beat Logan, I think, 10-1.
Yeah, you guys bounce back with the staring at elimination, and that's always fun to see when you see a younger team, no less, kind of bounce back and face adversity. I mean, you guys were an extremely young team, so I'm sure you were curious to see how the girls would respond from that first loss.
Yeah, we did have a young team. We on the varsity, we started a freshman, I think three sophomores, three juniors, and three seniors.
All in all, when you have a team that's that young, Coach, and you go to a stage like the state tournament, is it kind of entering the realm of the unknown? Like, I know you know what your girls are capable of doing, but taking that young of a squad and going up against an elite varsity team like Cedar on the road, you probably don't know what to expect.
True. We had actually played Cedar earlier in the year. We didn't see their best pitcher that first game, but I know we can compete. Young team, the good thing about them is they get better every game usually, and that's what they did this year. So I liked our chances. Quite frankly, they just hit the ball a little better than we did, and that was the difference.
After you guys defeated Logan and you beat them handedly to survive and move on to the next week, you guys went up against Desert Hills, number two seed from Region 9. Now, I know it's not quite like baseball, but Region 9 has such an advantage where these girls are out playing softball year-round. You guys topped Desert Hills 3-2, so to win kind of a defensive battle in the state playoffs, I mean, that right there, that's a great thing. You guys won a closely contested game.
Yeah, and if you look at Desert Hills' record, I think they were like 25-5. They had one of the best records in 3A, but that was a game, kind of young team. Some games they bring it and some they don't. That game, you know, we were ready to play and took it to them. Our defense was awesome. I think we threw two runners out at home plate from the outfield, so just great team effort.
You guys put yourself in a good situation following that win. What was the attitude around the girls like after they grabbed that 3-2 victory?
I think that's when they really started to believe in themselves. We as coach have been telling them all year that, you know, you guys are good. You know, you keep working, good things will happen. And I think that's when they really realized how good, you know, how much potential they have, how good they are.
You guys did manage to advance to the next day, which was this past Friday against Stansbury. Unfortunately, that's where the season came to a close, losing this contest 7-3. But all in all, you and I were talking off the cuff. This is the furthest that the Carbon Lady Dino softball team has gone in quite some time.
Yeah, I think you have to go back to 2005 to find the last year that we went advanced further in the state playoff.
And with such a young team, I mean, that obviously has to make you smile looking ahead to what you have.
Oh, yeah, and each year we've challenged the girls to improve in every aspect of the game. As I reviewed the stats from this season, I couldn't be happier. We improved. We hit more home runs. We struck out less. Our on-base was better. Our batting average was better. The real emphasis, I think, this next year, and of course we'll continue to work on the offense, but, you know, our defense could be a little better than that. That was probably the difference this year, but part of that goes with having such a young team.
If we look at just how young the squad is, Coach, you only have three seniors that played this year on the softball team. I mean, that's a really low number, especially for a team that not only advanced to the state tournament, but made it as far as you guys did. Talk to me about these three seniors and what kind of role they played on this year's squad.
We had the three. I'm not big on just making them captains because they're seniors. We had the girls vote, and the team picked these three to be their team captains, and they stepped it up. I couldn't be more pleased with the way they played. Kenley Nelson, you know, pitching in the circle, she did awesome. She was hurt for a little while during the season. McKenna Sorensen, she pitched great too. Unfortunately, she was hurt during the season, couldn't pitch the whole time. But luckily, I either had McKenna or Kinley able to pitch, and then they just, great girls, you love to coach them. They'll do whatever you ask, give you everything they got every minute. And then in the center, our center fielder was Markel Gressman. She was kind of the soul of the team, and she would kind of keep the dugout alive, and just three great girls. Wish them the best in their lives. They really did well.
It's an interesting situation, Coach, when you talk about three seniors surrounded by so many underclassmen. I mean, it can go one of either way. They could either be leaders or they could be frustrated, because you know those underclassmen, they're going to make mistakes at the varsity level. So, I mean, obviously to hear the stories you're telling about these girls, I mean, it definitely shows a lot of character the way that they led this young team.
Yes. And, you know, they could see the young girls were trying. I mean, the younger girls were doing everything they could. I mean, they made some mistakes, but it wasn't because they weren't trying. And so, especially the pitchers really appreciated that. They, game after game, they'd make comments how they really appreciated the way, you know, their defense played behind them.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Wade Williams of the Carbon Lady Dino softball squad. Coach, if we go back and we look at the three wins that you guys had in league play this year, that's what got you to the state championship tournament in itself. You guys had a couple of close calls throughout the year as well. Things maybe could have been a little bit different for you as far as the seeding goes.
That's true. I mean, that's the game, though. Injuries played a big part. Like I said, we rarely had McKenna and Kinley at both at the same time. We also had a couple other girls with probably McKenna Pendergrass, one of our best defensive players, wasn't able to throw overhanded for a few games. So with the young team, with the injuries, you know, all in all, I think it was a fantastic year, and I think the future just looks brighter.
Yeah, definitely. So between now and the beginning of next season, I know that there's those moratoriums where you can't really do a whole lot with the team, but what's the off-season workouts look like for this squad?
I encourage them all of them will, most all of them will get on a summer traveling team and play. They'll play upwards of anywhere. I think last year we had girls that played 160 games in the summer. And then we also, once a week, we'll go in and we'll do either open field or open gym, where we'll throw and we'll do some hitting drills and whatnot. And this young squad, they're excited. They're asking me, can we go already? And I said, no, we're going to take a month off, relax, and then we'll come back in about a month and start up again.
You got to love the enthusiasm, though.
Yeah, and that's the younger players there. You know, softball is right at the top of their life right now, and so that makes it fun.
As far as next season goes, Coach, there's going to be an alignment change as far as the classifications. And in most sports, things, I think, set up very well for Carbon. They'll be a part of Region 14 with ALA, Delta, JUAB, Mesa Prep, Providence Hall Union. JUAB's a familiar opponent. They ran the table this past year in league play. What do you make? How do you make of the new regions? What's your assessment of it?
It's going to be interesting. Some of the teams I don't know, but like you said, Union's always good. JUAB's always good. So we'll get some good competition in the region, and that's what we want, because the better your competition is, the better that helps you become. So some of the other schools I'm not so sure about, but we'll see you next year.
It appears that it does look, I don't want to say easier, but it looks a little bit more favorable as a whole, the 3A classification, compared to some of those squads that you know you're going to run into in the state tournament right now, the way things are set up.
All right. I mean, I think the way the classification worked out, I think Carbon now is one of the larger teams in 3A, where traditionally we've been one of the smaller teams. Well, obviously, the more kids you have to choose from, usually the better the team is, so that is in our favor next year, so I'm looking forward to that.
Last question before I let you go, Coach. If you had to describe this 2017 season as a whole, what word would you place with it?
That's a tough question. just heart. This team had heart. Like most, I mean, I've coached a lot of good teams, a lot of teams with a lot of heart, but this team really brought it. So was just a great year.
Probably hard to say goodbye to a team like that, right? That you appreciate so much. I know some years are probably better than others, so to say goodbye to this unit's probably not the easiest thing to do.
True. I mean, we had great team chemistry, and that's for me, the fun of coaching is bringing that chemistry together and developing that and just being a part of that and enjoying that. And that's going to be tough to redo that next year, but I think we can. But it was a lot of fun.
Well, Coach, it's a pleasure to get you on and get a little recap of the 2017 season for the Carbon softball squad. Thank you again. Congratulations on making it as far as you did with such a young group. And I know we'll talk again soon.
Hey, thanks, Jordan. Appreciate you and all you do.
Definitely my pleasure, Coach. A lot of positive things happening with the softball program. We've got a break for just a moment. When we return, we're going to move over to talk NBA basketball. Last night, the San Antonio Spurs, they were swept at the hands of the Golden State Warriors, and it may just be Manu Ginobili's final game in the NBA. We'll talk about that right after this.
Hey, this is Stephen Curry from the Golden State Warriors, number 30. You listen to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 750 AM.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, 107.3 FM, 7:50 AM. The night after the NBA Western Conference Finals come to a close, the Golden State Warriors waste no time. They sweep the San Antonio Spurs. I think a very little surprise around the league once we knew which San Antonio Spurs squad would actually be taking court. Joining us right now to talk a bit about last night's game, we have Jameson Welsh of BelieveTheHypeNBA.com. Jameson, good as always to get you on. Thank you.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me as always, man. Always appreciate it.
Last night was it was somewhat sad. I mean, this is a San Antonio Spurs team that, look, I liked. I had a lot of fun watching throughout the year, and I thought that the Spurs could give Golden State a run for their money at the beginning of the postseason. Wasn't the case going into the conference finals. Obviously, there was no Tony Parker, and even though Patty Mills had outplayed Parker, depth I knew would be an issue in this series. Then we have the injury to Kawhi Leonard. Things started off great for San Antonio for the first three quarters of this series. Kawhi goes down. We don't see him again. And it's just one of those years where the wheels finally fell off for San Antonio. And on the flip side, you had Golden State, who's as well-rounded as you could possibly be at this stage.
Well, yeah, that's the crazy part, because the moment Kawhi Leonard went down, the series was over. I mean, we saw the dramatic change in basically how the game was. The lead went from 25 to 12 like that, and then next thing you know, it's a one-possession game. And it looked like it happened overnight, over a couple minutes. Like, that's the crazy part. And once he wasn't able to return, we kind of knew this was going to happen. You know, everyone's going to talk about, well, the Warriors haven't played anyone healthy, blah, blah, blah. Look here, it's not for them to say, hey, are you healthy or not? Are you healthy? Are you healthy? And then we're going to play? No, like, it's not. It's not their fault that guys keep on getting hurt. You know, it's their fault to play who's in front of them, and that's what they've done. Now, the Spurs have had some interesting situations happen with their roster and whatnot. Tony Parker and David Lee are two older guys, so you know, they've had some injury history in the past, so hopefully they make some decisions based on those guys. But when it comes down to it, the Spurs just weren't good enough. The way the roster's constructed, the way some of their guys are, they're just not good enough to be a finals team right now. They're not. Now, LaMarcus Aldridge is a guy that you look at and you ask yourself, what is he and how does he fit in going forward? Because he's a guy that was very inconsistent in this series, and he's also a guy that he has two more years left at $20 million apiece. What's going to happen with him? You know, I think you got to look at his position on the team and look and see what's going to happen, because he's a guy you can move and get something for and improve your roster. So the Spurs have a lot of questions right now, but the injuries, yes, the injuries is where it really took their toll. And, of course, Kawhi Leonard does everything for them. So when he was out of the game, the series was over right there.
Maybe the end of Manu Ginobili's career. He's approaching 40 years old. But look, one of the things that stands out to me with Manu Ginobili is how he was taken for granted, I think, by a lot of NBA pundits, I think a lot of NBA fans, and I think a lot of spectators in general. I don't think you can overlook the impact that Manu Ginobili had. He is a first ballot Hall of Famer. He has won at every level. Don't forget, this guy also got a gold medal at Argentina. We can't forget about that as well. Over the last 15 years in the postseason, nobody has made more three-point shots than Manu Ginobili. That includes Ray Allen. That includes Steph Curry. That includes LeBron James. That includes Kobe Bryant. That's very unique company, to say the least. Manu Ginobili was a guy that I think 10 years from now, when we look back on and we say he may have been the piece that kept the glue, you know, the glue that kept the pieces together in San Antonio. Not the first guy that you mentioned, but Jamison, his production, very underrated ball player.
Well, here's the thing. Like, remember, they won the title in 99. They win that championship. They go 3 years without winning it because they really didn't have another playmaker on the perimeter. They didn't have a guy that defenses really had to fear on the wing. They didn't have that. And then they insert him, and he brings a whole different dimension. He's a guy that can shoot it. He can get to the hole. He can make plays for others. And it's like, whoa, they have a totally different dimension that no one ever knew about. They had a guy that no one really understood where he came from. They didn't know how to play him. He brings a Euro step. And it's like, whoa, where does he come from? So he complements what they do very well. And then he shot it very well from three, like you mentioned earlier. So now it's like, okay, we got a player here. And that changed their whole situation. Because there's no Manu. They don't beat those Laker teams in the mid-2000s. Like, they don't win in 2003. They don't win. So it's one of those things to where he changed their whole situation. And for a guy that was drafted 57th overall, if I'm not mistaken, that's one of the few guys that when you pick a guy in the second round, you hope to pan out. He's one of those examples because he panned out more than enough, and he won a gold medal. He's the guy that's a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's also a guy that, as talented as he was, he could have always started. He could have started on a bunch of teams, especially in his heyday. He could have started, you know, got 20 a night and all this and that, but he sacrificed his personal accomplishments for the good of the team, and that, to me, is huge.
Yeah, and again, when you're looking at a first ballot Hall of Famer for Manu Ginobili, I point to the gold medal in Athens back in 2004. To me, that's the crowning achievement. Yeah, the four-time NBA champion, that looks great on the resume, don't get me wrong. But you got to remember, we're talking about the Pro Basketball Hall of Fame, and going back to 2004, Argentina won the gold medal in 2004 in Athens. I mean, you just put that in perspective. They beat Team USA. They won the gold medal that year, and Manu Ginobili was the catalyst for it. I think that right there speaks volumes to how good this guy really was.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, they had some other pro guys as well, but they didn't. I mean, he was the guy. He was the guy that led them, and he was really good. Even in the finals in 05, he was the guy that was kind of their difference maker, because Tim Duncan, even though he won the MVP of that series, if I'm not mistaken, Ginobili had the more impact because he wasn't going against two Hall of Fame type of defenders. You know, Ben Wallace is a Hall of Fame type defender. Same thing with Rasheed Wallace. You know, they may not be Hall of Fame players, but defensively, they are really, really good. So Duncan didn't have the greatest of numbers in that series. With that being said, Ginobili was able to do just enough for them to eke by, and especially in that Game 7, you know, that was a very, very tough series, but he was the guy that put him over the top. So his career, I mean, he had one of the best careers that no one talks about.
No, I agree with you 100%. Again, our guest right now is Jamison Welsh of BelieveTheHypeNBA.com. We'll stick with San Antonio here for a moment. Before we move on to Golden State, you look at their current salary cap situation. You mentioned LaMarcus Aldridge. He's due to make $21 million next season, and then he has a player option for 2018-2019. The way things look following this year, there's no way he's going to opt out of that. Kawhi Leonard is under contract for the foreseeable future. Pau Gasol has a player option at $16 million. Wouldn't expect Pau to decline that option. Tony Parker's on the hook next year for $15 million. Danny Green's on the hook for $10 million. I don't know where this team goes next, but I do believe that 15-year magical run of the San Antonio Spurs, and you probably could go even further back than that, close to a 20-year run for the San Antonio Spurs, it looks like it's about over.
Yeah, it does. It does. You know, as great as they have been, they're still, you know, as long as they have Kawhi, they'll be all right. Like, they'll still be in the mix, but they're going to have to make a decision on LaMarcus Aldridge. I don't think you can have him as your number two option the way the league is played, the way the game is played now. I don't think you can do that and succeed. I really don't. I think you got to move him and create some more flexibility and bring in a younger piece that complements your best player. I think that's the thing they got to concentrate on going forward. Also, when you look at their roster and you look at their situation, they need another playmaker. They need another guy on the wing at the two or the one that can make plays for others. Right now, Kawhi is their only playmaker that's consistent. They got to have another playmaker. And also, when you look at their roster, you know, who's the guy on their team that can actually score, you know, on the perimeter besides Kawhi? They don't have another guy that you can just give the ball to and they can manufacture a shot. That just doesn't happen. Now, Jonathan Simmons is an interesting player, but he's still young and he's still trying to figure things out. But they need some more. They need some more guys that can put pressure on our defense. And right now, they have a lot of supporting guys. I don't know if that gets it done.
Well, with that being said, I don't know if Greg Popovich stays in San Antonio much longer either. I mean, he's almost 70 years old, and that's another topic that you have to mention when you talk about this dynasty of the Spurs breaking up. How much longer does Popovich want to be around the league? And with that being said, does he want to take on the role of building another core when he's had the same core for about 16, 17 years? That's a legitimate question with this team looking ahead.
Well, he has a top five player in Kawhi Leonard. So whenever you have a top five player, you don't leave unless you have health issues. He's going to be around. He's going to try to make one more go of it. They're going to try to make one more go. But again, his time is ticking. He's not going to be coaching when he's 72 years old. Like, that's not going to happen. They have a good situation. They're still the second best team out west. Like, with all the stuff that's being said, like they lost to a team that's the best team in the league and one of the best teams ever. So it's not like they're losing any slouches. They're just not as good as the Warriors. And there's no shame in that. That being said, when it comes down to it, if they're not able to improve, they're going to be in trouble. Like they're going to decline because one, the tape gets around the league very quickly. So whatever strengths you have, if you have one main guy and everybody else is role players, that gets figured out rather quickly. And two, you can't just keep on building stuff on Kawhi's shoulders because, as great as he is, he's going to need some help. He's going to need some guys that can take some of the playmaking off him and also the scoring load off him. I mean, he can do everything. Yes, he's probably the best overall player in the league off the defense when you consider all 90 to 100 games. But with that being said, he can't continue to do that and expect for him to be fresh from the playoffs, especially with the injuries he's had now. He's going to need some help to take the pressure off a little bit.
Move on and talk about Golden State. We can get as analytical as we want. I mean, I am a stats guy. I love the numbers. Yet the eye test speaks an awful lot, I think, especially in postseason basketball. And one of the things that stands out to me right now with Golden State is they make it look easy. They're not struggling at all. Yes, they sweep through the first three rounds, but they did it with relative ease. And the other stat, if I got to throw a stat in with this that stands out to me, Klay Thompson is shooting less than 40% from the field in the postseason, yet they still have yet to lose a game this playoff set. It's amazing to me, Jameson. They've made it look too easy. And you can't, I know LeBron James is the greatest player in the world. I get that. But nobody can convince me otherwise that this next series will go longer than five games, regardless who it is, if Golden State continues to play this way. They make it look too easy.
Right, they do. And here's the thing, you can't double anybody. You double Steph, kicks it over to Klay, who swings it over to Durant, open three. Vice versa. If you double Durant, well, then Steph's wide open. So you're damn if you do, you're damn if you don't. And they all pass the ball well. That's the thing. They pass the ball well. They don't mind passing the ball. And they take good shots for the most part. If they don't turn the ball over, if they have 12 or less turnovers, they're not losing a game. Plain and simple. Like, they're not losing. If they don't turn the ball over and they play their regular game, they're not losing. If they don't turn the ball over and they play their A game, they're going to beat you by 25. So, yeah, like, it's a cheat code. It really is. I really think they're a team that's on a mission. They are pissed off from what happened last year, and they're going to prove it. They're already, like, if you saw the pictures after they won last night and when they accepted the conference championship trophy, they're like, all right, well, it's time to go. Like, it's time to get the real thing. They got four more wins, and they're on a mission. They're on a mission to really, make this thing happen. They've heard all the jokes, all the 3-1 jokes, all the slander, all that stuff for a whole year now. They're ready to make someone pay. So we'll see what happens in about 10 days or so. But I expect them to win a championship. I would be surprised if they didn't.
I would be surprised again if this next series, regardless who it's against, I don't want to write off Boston, even though I think that Cleveland probably wins the next two games. I don't see the NBA Finals going more than five games if they're playing at this level. Last night, Kevin Durant was 10 of 13 from the field, and Jameson, he didn't have to work for any of those 10 makes. He didn't work for a single one.
Right. Right. Like, that's the thing. Like, that's the biggest difference between him being in Golden State and him being OKC. In OKC, he had to work very hard to get his buckets, and also they didn't make it easier. Like, they didn't put him on the move. They didn't do a whole lot. And Golden State is getting single covered and is able to just go to work. He's able to do what he does best. So when you equate those, then yeah, I mean, he's able to get chased down blocks and able to get double digit boards and, you know, have a handful of assists. He's able to do different things because he's not expending so much energy on the offensive end. And that's the beauty of this Warriors situation, is that they're all able to share the offensive load without anyone being overly overworked. So, yeah, he's in great shape there. That's why I thought the move was a no-brainer for him. Basketball-wise, it's the best move he could have possibly made. I mean, I don't understand why people are so up in arms about it. I mean, anyone that can go to a spot to make their job easier and expand their career and make decisions off the court even better, it's a no-brainer to me, but people don't understand that. But with that being said, Kevin Durant is probably going to be your Finals MVP when it's all said and done. He's going to have one of those kind of series.
Jameson, it is always fun to get you on the show and talk some NBA basketball. I know there's plenty of storylines floating around, and we'll do it again soon.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me, as always.
We've got a break for just a moment. We'll come back for the final touches on this edition of the show when we return.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
Back for this final segment on this Tuesday edition of Drive Time Sports. We're going to move back over to the NFL. If you missed it earlier, or if you haven't heard the news, the NFL has officially announced that overtime periods will be moved from 15 minutes to 10 minutes. And they're calling it a safety measure, which I'm just not buying. I don't believe this is going to make the game any safer moving forward. I mean, look at it. 83 overtime games over the last five seasons. 22 of them lasted at least 10 minutes. The average time in overtime in the last 5 years is 7 minutes and 43 seconds. Now, during that time frame, where that number comes from, there have been 5 games that have ended in a tie. That's in 5 years. An average of 1 per year. If overtime had ended after 10 minutes, there would have been a total of 16 ties for an average of 3.2 over 512 games that were analyzed for that data. The move of the shorter overtime to me is a ploy to give the appearance that the NFL is trying to make the game safer. I've been very critical of the NFL this offseason, going back to the draft and the idea of the stance that they've taken on domestic violence, yet Joe Mixon goes in the second round. And I don't want to rehash that once again. But if the NFL was truly concerned about player safety, why don't they just get rid of Thursday night football? I mean, that's the problem, right? You play on Sunday, and then you got to jump back and play on Thursday. That's an extremely short week. And really breaking down the numbers of overtime, ESPN did the numbers on this. They project that the shorter overtime will cut down the number of plays by 0.06% next season. And that's a safety measure? And I go back to it with Thursday night football. Remember, the NFL had a handful of Thursday night games once upon a time. And look, I'm not complaining that we as fans get more football. But if you're really bothered about the safety measure, why in the world would the NFL not address teams playing 2 games in 5 days? Because of the money, obviously. More eyeballs are glued to the TV set, and the NFL has been able to sell the new Color Rush jerseys to fans. And again, teams wear these hideous uniforms on Thursday night. Once again, I think the NFL comes across as wanting to sound sincere and wanting to make the game quote-unquote safer and wanting to take a stand. But when you look at it from a statistical standpoint, they have done nothing to make the game safer with this 15 to 10 minute overtime rule. Thursday night football, it's a polarizing topic, right? It's not going anywhere. But overtimes are now going to be 10 instead of 15 minutes, which means we're going to get ties from time to time in the NFL, maybe a little bit more frequently. Out of time on the show today, I have to thank Coach Wade Williams for taking out the time to join us, and also Jameson Welsh. Always fun to get him on. Tomorrow, we'll talk some horse racing with Steve Bordstein, the aftermath of the Preakness. No Triple Crown winner this year, and I'm just fine with that, and I'm sure Steve is as well. Plus, we'll continue to recap the spring sports season. That's coming up on tomorrow's edition of Drive Time Sports. Right now, coming up next, it's NASCAR Live here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I will catch you tomorrow. Be safe. I am out.